Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
Dr. Silver, welcome. Always wonderful to have you on the program with us. Hello.
Appreciate it very much. Happy to be here, Dean.
So we're going to start off with the very serious subject that we were just talking about before the news. We're talking about helium balloons. And I just saw a bunch of helium balloons floated by our 18th floor studio window when I was getting ready to start the show today. And, we're talking about helium balloons, and I had talked about how funny it sounds when somebody inhales a helium balloon, you know, the helium out of a balloon. And, you know, we said, I don't think that's safe. I don't think it's recommended. And we said, we better ask the doctor about this.
Yeah, definitely not safe, not recommended, although just full disclosure, I'm a child of the 70s, and so, you know, I've inhaled a lot of balloons, let's put it that way.
It's funny. It's funny, isn't it?
It's funny until somebody passes out and can't breathe, and then maybe not so funny.
There's always somebody in the crowd that's going to spoil a party. So what happens exactly if when you inhale the helium? What's happening to your vocal cords? And then, you know, where does the potential damage come in?
Yeah, so let's start with the damage. So helium is lighter than air. You breathe it in, and it mixes with the oxygen in your lungs, and then it becomes absorbed, essentially, in your body. So even if you're standing upright, you would think, oh, well, if it's lighter than air, it'll just come out of my lungs. Well, it doesn't work like that. It displaces the oxygen in your blood, and then you've got a problem, particularly if you're a kid where you've got smaller lungs, you've got less blood volume, your metabolic rate is higher. Kids just burn through oxygen. They always need a ton of it at all times. And so if you take a big chunk of that away, they could die. I mean, it sounds crazy, but it's truly dangerous for children and certainly for adults. The reason why it makes your voice sound funny is it changes the speed of sound through your throat. And that's what makes it sound funny. Cause it's about three times faster in air than air is. So that's kind of interesting, but I would leave that for the clowns, so to speak.
Yeah, it sounds like even they shouldn't do it. It sounds like
right. They may have an insurance rider. I don't know about, but yeah, don't inhale the balloons. No. And especially, you know, I have to paint a slightly dark note on it too. You don't always know what else is in it nowadays.
Oh.
People do funny things, and you know, you wouldn't want to be inhaling something dangerous. So,
all right. Well, there you go. One major piece of entertainment now shelved forever.
We doctors are good at that, Dave. We're good at just crushing the fun and
killing our fun. Yeah, killing our fun. Helium balloon killer.
That's right. One helium molecule at a time.
That's right. So I was reading a story this week about beta blockers and statins. A lot of people take both for a variety of reasons. And there are positives and there are some negatives. What can you tell us about beta blockers and statins? What are their functions in the best of both worlds? Are there other things that we get positively from them? And are there things that we should be aware of if we are taking these very commonly taken prescriptions?
Sure. So statins are drugs that are metabolized by the liver, and they help to reduce the types of bad cholesterol that build up in our bodies. And so folks with high cholesterol or the diagnosis of hyperlipidemia in the medical terminology, this is a common drug that's utilized to help them reduce their high cholesterol, their LDL, if you will. And so they're tremendous drugs in the sense that they can extend people's lives and keep them healthy from the standpoint of lowering the risk of coronary artery disease and other types of vascular diseases such as dementia, kidney disease, strokes, and so on. So powerful drug. There are side effects, as you asked about side effects. Certainly, some people have issues with the liver, especially, and they end up not being able to take it. It can sometimes lead to muscle breakdown and sometimes diabetes even. So there's definitely downsides. Like every drug, there's good things and bad things. And then, you know, interestingly, you were talking about this study that came out just recently, which looked at people with Parkinson's who were on statins and also beta blockers, which I'll talk about in a second. But they had a 10-year increase in the time to diagnosis, meaning they were living 10 years longer without the disease before they were diagnosed.
Without Parkinson's.
These people without Parkinson's, yeah. Right. And so the question is, what's going on here? Should everyone be on statin? You know, I think the answer is no, not necessarily, but it is interesting given that, you know, Parkinson's is a disease in the brain. There are blood vessels, many blood vessels in the brain. Statins are a drug that help blood vessel disease. And so is there a relationship there between reduced buildup of plaque in the brain blood vessels and the development of Parkinson's? And I think that's one question.
We're not clear on what the answer is to that question at this point?
Correct. Nobody really. This is one of those studies that makes everybody scratch their chin and go, and then, you know, it will lead to more research, ideally. But I think there are definitely some questions raised. Similarly, beta blockers, those are drugs that that people take sometimes to help reduce the sympathetic output of the body. So in some folks, they help with reducing the blood pressure, but also sympathetic stimulation to the heart over time can lead to damaging effects. And so these beta blockers are given to people that have had heart attacks. You get a beta blocker. Many folks are on them, as I mentioned, for high blood pressure anyways or for other reasons. And there was a similar relationship there in the study between the beta blockers and the delay to Parkinson's onset. And so, again, the question is, well, what's going on there? And now it just, you know, just off the cuff, it makes me think about blood vessels, because the action of beta blockers is really, you know, it's keeping those blood vessels nice and soft and supplicant and pliant, and helping reduce arterial stiffness over time. And so perhaps there is some connection there between the stiffness of the vessels and the development of these neurologic diseases. So it's, you know, it's another breadcrumb on the trail to understanding Parkinson's, you know, and a variety of other neurologic issues. But it's a piece of the puzzle. It's not the puzzle.
It's really amazing, isn't it? Because beta blockers and statins, I don't have the statistics in front of me, but you'd never heard about them in the past. I don't know, maybe 15, 20 years ago. I don't know when, you know, they became so widely used. But they are sort of like miracle drugs for, you know, for lots of reasons now that they are very commonly prescribed.
Everybody has them, it would seem, certainly over a certain age range. You know, when you get into the 50-year-old age cohort and above, it's just very common. And they have a plethora of good side effects. As I mentioned, you know, they're helpful to the heart and to the blood vessels and can, you know, in some cases probably contribute to prolonging life. Of course, there are side effects like every other medication, but yeah, there's plenty of benefits to be seen with beta blockers.
219 area code asks, I was recently diagnosed with prostate cancer. I showed no symptoms whatsoever leading up to it. A routine test at the doctor's office showed my numbers on the PSA test. That's the prostate test, I guess, which is taken it's a blood test, right? The PSA test?
Yeah. Prostate-specific antigen. What the PSA stands for.
The texter says my numbers were high. The doctor investigated further, and the prostate cancer was found Are there, I had no physical symptoms, he says. Are there that should alert somebody that they may be, you know, suffering prostate cancer?
Great question. I'm so glad that the caller was able to identify the problem, and wish him great luck in moving through that. Prostate cancer is, you know, the prostate is that gland that sits kind of deep inside the lower pelvis in men, and secretes lubricants into the urethra of the male sex organ, and over time, you know, that it's sort of like sort of like a carton of milk. Over time, eventually, the prostate's going to kind of turn in all of us. And so, you know, there are a variety of symptoms that would be concerning. So things like if your stream is suddenly not what it once was, meaning if it slows and it's dribbling when you're trying to go to the bathroom, or if it's intermittent, certainly if you have pain when you're urinating, that would be something to get looked at. If there's blood in the urine or in the semen, even, that would be a concern that you'd want to have looked at. And then more general body symptoms like fatigue, weakness, weight loss, those would be things to look at. And then finally, and this is a very generic one, but if you're having some dysfunction, erectile dysfunction, certainly that could be a result of it. Of a cancer, and there's a variety of other reasons why men have ED, erectile dysfunction, cancer just being one on a list of many things. But essentially, when the plumbing stops working, you want to go and see a plumber. I mean, it's pretty straightforward. So those would be some of the things that I would look at, and I'd also look at your risk factors. So you know, if you're African American, if you have a first degree relative that was diagnosed with prostate cancer under the age of 65, if you know you have BRCA1 or BRCA2, those are breast cancer gene mutations, but if they're in your family, that's another reason to get looked at. So there are definitely risk factors for folks, and there's others. Then you want to get seen and have your PSA looked at.
Yeah, I almost you know, hate to use this phrase, but I've heard it before, that if you're going to get a cancer, that prostate cancer is the one you want to get because it is so highly treatable. Is that still the case?
Totally. Yeah. Yes. I think if I were going to write down a cancer and say I'm going to have to get it, definitely that would be the one. It's treatable, and in the old days, you know, it was treatable with this very kind of invasive procedure called radical prostatectomy, which is as invasive as it sounds, where they would go in surgically and remove all of the bad tissue in the area, and it's extremely traumatic, and most folks would end up with significant side effects afterwards, not, you know, urinary incontinence and the whole nine yards. Nowadays, depending on the kind of cancer, quote unquote cancer, I put it in quotations because it's such an umbrella term. You know, we're just to zoom out for a second for your callers, Dean. When we say cancer, all we mean is cells that are acting abnormally, right? Normally in the body, the cells are kind of operating on almost like a 24-hour clock, and then they divide at this time of day. And they split up at this time of day, and then you've got two new cells at this time of day, and they start functioning normally at this time of day. So you can think about it at like 6 in the morning, the cells start dividing, and then at night, they're all split up and functioning normally. And with cancer, the cells just lose the clock, and they just do whatever they want. They might divide and split and function by, you know, by noon, and then, you know, everything's all in disarray, to use that clock analogy. Mm-hmm. And so with prostate cancer, some of these cells are funny looking, but they just aren't doing a whole heck of a lot, meaning that they're slowly dividing over years, and they just don't cause a lot of a problem for you. And so some folks can just sit there with quote unquote cancer, and they just watch it, or they'll do some kind of hormonal therapy with, you know, an anti-testosterone type therapy to kind of keep it at bay. And so the bottom line is there's a variety of types. Not all types are the same. It's almost like different disease states entirely. You can live a long, full life with prostate cancer now.
Is it still true that men are hesitant to go to the doctor for whatever reason, that they're not proactive. If they see something wrong, they just rather tough it out and, you know, to hope that it resolve itself. Is there still a gender disparity with that sort of thing?
Well, I think so. And the other reality here, right, is that we're talking about a private area that, you know, nobody, right. You know, if you're married, your wife knows what's going on sometimes not. Yeah. And so it's a tough thing to talk about. But once you get over it and you just say, okay, just a part of me, just like the nose on my face, and you kind of get through that stigma, then it's a lot easier to deal with.
Yeah, so, you know, guys, you know, if any of what we've just talked about applies to you, check it out with your doctor. If you're the guy in your life won't do it, everyone else, be proactive and force them to go, because it is very highly treatable. And good luck to our texter who had, in the text said that they took his prostate out. And that he's recovering from that now. So best of luck to you and your recovery on that. And as always, a pleasure to talk with Dr. Jeremy Silver, Medical Director, Emergency Medicine, Northwestern's Kishwaukee Hospital. Hope you have a great day today, Doc. Thanks so much.
Same, Dean. Thanks for having me.